now we welcome in someone who is on the Giants beat for NorthJersey.com and for the record, and someone I used to check the record print copy every single morning while I was in high school to see if he wrote something about me. Art Stapleton, welcome back to the show. I appreciate you making some time for us.
Danielle, what's up? Busy time of year and trying to catch up with you. You've been everywhere and anywhere, so it's good to catch up with another fellow North Jerseyan.
That's right. I am one busy person, that's for sure. And so are you. It's draft time. Art, we'll start right there. Your draft grade for the New York Giants in 2026 is?
I think they got an A. You know, when I graded individually, I had an A for really their first three picks. I think they did very well with taking the player that was there with Arvell Reese. I don't think they believed he'd be there at five. And I think taking Francis or CeCe Mauinoa at 10, I think they took the best offensive lineman on their board. They believe he can make the transition to guard immediately and then see what happens down the road. And then I think Colton Hood at 37, when they woke up on Friday morning, Colton Hood was the number one guy on their board. So the fact that they waited it out and got him at 37, you know, potential CB1 on, you know, in the secondary, at least grow into that. I think they were definitely thrilled. And then the trade up for Malachi Fields, a wide receiver from Notre Dame. Now, you know, you can debate whether you think he's going to be a very good player, a solid player, a not good player. But the reality is that they read the board well, and all reports out of Miami coming out of the draft was that the Dolphins were sitting there in the third round waiting to take Malachi Fields, and the Giants jumped up. Now, did they overpay a little bit? Probably overpaid a little bit by giving up a 2027 fourth round pick. But I think they like the brand of ball Malachi Fields plays. And I do think they like his fit on the boundary in the run game that John Harbaugh wants to have too. So we'll go, you know, those top four, I think, are really the heavy graded portion of the draft. So, I mean, I think they hit the nail on the head in terms of what they wanted to accomplish. I think they have a clear vision as to what they wanted the players to do. And now 3-4 years down the road, we can truly assess what they were able to do in John Harbaugh's first draft as head coach.
You know, I watched that Arvell Reese, you know, I've been watching everything a little bit here, a little bit there of everybody, Jets and Giants. And Arvell Reese really struggled to name a Giant he would like to play with. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I think that what you make of it is that, you know, the Giants go to the story that the Giants told afterwards is that, you know, everybody says, oh, why do you do mock drafts? I did 9 Giants only mock drafts. Okay, going in, Danielle, and everyone's like, oh, why do you do it? Well, first off, fans love reading them. Secondly, I always get, you know, I try to do it fairly and not try to jump projections, and I get a good idea as to who will be on the board. The Giants do their own projections. They may not call them mock drafts, so to speak, but every team in the NFL does it. And the Giants did not have Arvell Reese, or at least the combination of Arvell Reese at 5 and Mauinoa at 10 in any of their projections. Yeah. So it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I think Reese did well on his visit with the Giants, but I don't think the Giants thought he would be there at 5. And I think part of the reason was that not only did the Jets go David Bailey, but then Jeremiah Love went 3rd to Arizona. There was the idea that maybe someone would trade up into that spot for Reese. They did not. And then 4th, the Titans took Carnell Tate, which was a little bit of a surprise. But I think there was also that idea of, okay, well, the Titans will either take Reese for Robert Saleh, or they will allow someone to jump up into that spot and take Arvell Reese. And I think at 5, the Giants looked at it and said, you know what? Why won't we just take him? His natural position at Ohio State has been inside linebacker. He's played the will linebacker. Everything with the Jets was about his projection to edge rusher because they were not looking to take an off-ball linebacker. And I think why he fits the Giants is that Reese looks at it and says, they can look at him and say, we think he was the best off-ball linebacker in the draft. Now, where he projects 2 years from now, we'll see where they're at. So there's one other clip that goes around, Danielle, is that from the Ohio State Pro Day. NFL Films had it, and they caught Harbaugh talking to Reese on the sideline. He came over. Harbaugh was with Matt Patricia, and Harbaugh was just talking to Reese, and he said something in passing like, you know, you had a great day at our facility. So when he came in early in the process, I think the Giants really liked Reese. I just don't think they legitimately thought they would have a chance at him. So I give him a little bit of a pass. The idea that I'm sure Arvel Reese going into the draft was not thinking, I'm going to the Giants. I think he's probably caught up at this point as to who he's going to be playing with.
And I know Coach Harbaugh and Malik Nabers talked about the situation, but I think really the Nabers question of where does he fit is a valid one. So middle linebacker, is that where he's going to be lining up?
Yeah, I mean, Harbaugh said right off the bat, and which I thought was interesting, is that, look, you know, this is a guy who played will linebacker at Ohio State. Like, we love the fact that he has pass rush ability, but we are not going to turn him into an edge immediately. And I think when you look the big picture, Danielle, I think that was the problem that the Jets had looking at Reese, is that they wanted an edge. They needed a pass rusher, a proven pass rusher. Yeah. If you were just taking it for production and that edge that you know the guy can play, you take Bailey, and that's what the Jets did. I think because of that, so many people lost sight of the idea of what Reese actually did at Ohio State. In the middle of the Ohio State defense, it was Sonny Styles and Arvel Reese. Arvel Reese did a lot of QB spying because they loved his physicality in the run game. He was able to read and react. And I think when they could project him as an edge rusher, and look, he's not Micah Parsons. Let's not make that comparison. Let's not make the comparison to Abdul Carter, because they're all different positions. But I think the Giants see Reese and say, you know what? We like what he is. Now, we don't have to worry about the projection in a year, in 2 years, that can he make that projection to edge rusher. So I think what's funny is that Harbaugh, I thought he handled the Malik Nabers question perfectly. You know, I think sometimes we look at players and we don't say that they're going to be, you know, analysts. You know what I mean? You throw a player on there on Bleacher Report, you want to hear their instant reaction. You want to hear what they're going to say. And Nabers' first thing is, well, I don't know where he fits. And that's the reaction a lot of people had, because you looked at him as an edge rusher. But I think Harbaugh made a point and said, look, I have no problem with players questioning what they think about moves that shows they're invested in the team. But he said the next morning he had Nabers up in his office and he said, you want to know where he fits, I'm going to tell you. And the fact that they had a plan for what they're going to do with Reese, I think kind of sets it apart, that it's not just, we're going to take this guy because we think he's talented and we're going to try to make him something that he's not. They're going to play him where he's comfortable. They're going to play him next to Tremaine Edmonds. And now all of a sudden you have two inside linebackers who are long, athletic, and have played the position. And now you say, okay, well, what are you going to do on third down? Well, on third down, now you can bump Reese up and you can play him on the line with Brian Burns and Abdul Carter and Kayvon Thibodeau. And then you can say, hey, Micah McFadden, we love you. We want to give you enough snaps. Now you can come in and play sub linebacker. Now all of a sudden you don't lose anything just in terms of experience at inside linebacker and sub packages, but now you've got Reese as a weapon up front. So it'll be interesting. You know, look, that's what they're saying now. If training camp comes around and somehow they decided that they were going to trade Thibodeau because someone offered a package that they couldn't refuse, well, then maybe they do move Reese into that role. But I don't think that's happening anytime soon. And I think John Harbaugh, and what we've seen, he wants players who can contribute now. Like, he does not want to look at projection and say, what are you going to be for me in 2 years? Because Harbaugh wants to win. I mean, Harbaugh's 63 years old. He has 180 wins coming from Baltimore. He's not used to rebuilding. So he wants to put these guys in positions where they can contribute already. So that's what I think of Reese. And I think from Nabers' perspective, it was an interesting dynamic. And again, I haven't talked to Malik Nabers, but from the way Harbaugh presented it, it was almost like, hey, you can talk about the team, shows you're invested, but I have no problem you coming up to the office saying, hey, how are we going to use this guy? Because let me show you and let me see what you got. And then it's kind of funny how afterwards you start seeing Malik on social media, you know, favoriting things that Arvell Reese did, and he's out there. And, you know, a lot of these guys just want to know, A, how's it going to affect me? B, how's it going to affect my team? And if we're going to win, then I'm good with it. So I think that's kind of where you're at with the way the Giants are.
Now, I looked at, you know, the pick number 10. I really thought Caleb Downs in that spot was a good fit. And we're talking with Art Stapleton on The Fan. So I thought Caleb Downs was a fit. He ends up going to where? Dallas, I think. And So what does the pick of Maui Noah then signify in terms of just the identity of this Giants team moving forward?
Well, I think, you know, they were on the search for a right guard. I think they had a hole in the line and the starting lineup. I think they just signed Jermaine Illuminor to a 3-year deal. I think, you know, the first 2 years they expect him to be here. You know how these deals work. You know, you get to year three and who knows, you know, where that player is going to be. Jermaine is in his early 30s, so you know he's played great last year, best NFL season. I mean, so you don't want to now all of a sudden put a guy at tackle, but Harbaugh wants his guards to be physical presences. He wants them to be brawlers in the run game. And that wasn't necessarily, I've been a proponent of them re-signing Greg Van Roten at right guard, played every snap the last 2 years, gave Giants anything and everything that they could have expected in that spot. But I think they like Maui Noah's presence. I think they liked him in Miami. Obviously, the one concern you've heard about is the herniated disc that, you know, popped up in the pre-combine, medicals and everything else. But I think they like him for who he is. I think they believe he can play guard and then eventually kick out the tackle or just stay at guard. And, you know, you've got Marcus Bowe from last year, who is right now your swing tackle. So you're not panicked in a situation where you need to move a rookie out if something were to happen to Andrew Thomas or to Jermaine Illuminor. And I think they just move forward here with the combination of veterans that they have behind Maui Noah at right guard. They brought in Daniel Falele from Baltimore, who Harbaugh has started for the last 2 years. Now, you talk to people in Baltimore. He has not been a great player for Baltimore, but by the same token, he's been part of a line that's allowed Lamar Jackson to win the MVP, and they've been among the league leaders in rushing for 2 years. So, you know, again, sometimes it's, you know, Danielle, you and I are baseball fans too. You know, it's value above replacement too, right? I mean, Falele might not be that all pro or a pro bowler, but you bring him into this mix. Is he better than your next best guard in the rotation? And is he better than Evan Neal? Yes. Is he better than Josh Azudu? Yeah, right now from what he's done, because he's been able to start for 2 seasons. So that's kind of where you're building the position out. But right now, I think the reason they picked Maui Noah is that he was their best offensive lineman on the board. They believe that he can kick inside the guard, and then they'll wait and see what happens and see where, you know, I mean, there are some talent evaluators out there, Danielle, that talk about, you know, Maui Noah can be a Pro Bowl / all pro guard, depending on how things go. You know, and it's funny because, you know, Zach Martin was a tackle at Notre Dame, and then the Cowboys drafted him, kicked him inside, and then all of a sudden we know Zach Martin, I mean, potentially a Hall of Famer when his votes come up for Canton. So I think Maui Noah, the reason why they took him is that they would have taken him at 5. I've been told that if Reese was off the board and Love was off the board, and if Reese had gone at 4 or vice versa, that they would have taken Maui Noah at 5 and then maybe turned their attention to a receiver at 10, if not a Caleb Downs, if the receivers were both gone, if Tate and Jordan Tyson were off the board. So I think they took him because he's their best offensive lineman. And what's funny, Danielle, is think about it. All the reaction to Caleb Downs, and I love Caleb Downs too, so don't get me wrong. I think he's going to have a great career in the NFL. And yes, it hurts that he's with the Cowboys if you're a Giants fan who wanted him. But the reality is that how many years Giants need offensive linemen, need offensive linemen, need offensive linemen, even in free agency? What are they doing? They're not signing anybody on the interior. What's going on? What's going on? Then they draft Maui Noah, and then, you know, it's, wait a minute, why didn't they draft the safety?
Yeah, it's the opposite. Right. Well, now, the defensive line is missing a captain, Dexter Lawrence. Bye-bye, Dexter Lawrence. We've got Shelby Harris now coming in. And now this DJ Reader conversation, too. Is there room for both? And I guess, what strengths does Harris now bring to this team?
Yeah, no, there's room for – it's more the merrier at this point. I think that's the way the Giants are approaching it. I mean, very rarely do you get the chance to strip down something that has been a weakness for you. And, yes, it was a weakness with Dexter Lawrence, and it is a weakness without Dexter Lawrence. So how do you reconstruct it? Well, first off, there weren't any defensive tackles that they had in the first – two rounds that they thought would be an immediate upgrade or better than the guys that they had on their board. So the idea of this Caden McDonald from Ohio State that went one pick before they picked Hood, I've been told, and again, sometimes you get information after the draft and you're like, okay, well, maybe they're just saying that. So take it for what it's worth. McDonald was not a guy that they were targeting, even though Houston moved up to that spot. They were all over Colton Hood. And I think, like you said, Shelby Harris, from what I heard, is a big personality as a veteran. You're talking about somebody who comes here now and knows his role. He's played at least 500 defensive snaps in four of the last 5 years. He started in this league. So you're trying to now put the puzzle back together. You have Roy Robertson Harris that's still here as a veteran. You know, maybe you can get better quality snaps from him this year than what you got last year. And then you have Darius Alexander, who you hope takes that next step going into a year two, where he can maybe offer a little bit more disruption on the interior. He played well down the stretch last season. And then you're going to consider any one of these names, the DJ Readers, the Austin Johnsons, Calais Campbell's been mentioned. What's his future? He had a great year in Arizona last year, but he's 39 years old. Does he want to reunite with John Harbaugh and say, you know what, I'll see you in the summer, but I'll give you everything I got come September? You know, and that's kind of the tricky situation when you're dealing with a lot of these veterans, Danielle, is that, you know it and I know it. You know, John Harbaugh is going to run a very, very, very grueling camp.
Yeah.
So if you're a veteran and you're signing on with a John Harbaugh team now in April and May, you know that it's going to be kind of that situation where you need to sit down and communicate as a veteran with your coaches and say, look, I think, you know, I need to take it slow here. You know, I need to kind of take the first 2 weeks of camp and just kind of relax. I felt like I had heard that Shelby Harris felt as though his production was hurt last year in Cleveland because they really grinded him into the ground last year in training camp. So I think some of these decisions that they're talking about, I think the Giants need to be honest with the players, and I think the players need to be honest with them and say, look, you know, you're going to get everything I got from September to January. You know, let's work out a plan in the summer. And that seems to fit John Harbaugh and what he wants to do and kind of understand, okay, we're going to need to bring in some veterans here. It's going to be a collective. It's not necessarily going to be, you're not replacing Dexter Lawrence, but you could become a better run defense if you get the right players to fit what you want to do up front. And you're not looking for a defensive tackle who is going to all of a sudden be in your pass rush packages. And I think that's kind of what is funny about the whole situation, is that they don't need to bring in a defensive tackle who is going to rush the passer. Now, obviously, you want to take a defensive tackle who's going to contribute there, but it's not something that you're looking at going, oh man, we're really lacking in pass rush right now. You know, I think when you draft Bobby Jamison Travis from Auburn in the sixth round, The reason Bobby Jameson Travis is available in the sixth round is he is a one-dimensional, run-stopping defensive lineman who is a huge man. And in today's NFL, you got to find your right fit, because if there's a team looking for a penetrating defensive tackle who wants to get upfield and contribute in the pass rush and not just a guy who's going to contribute on first and second down, you're not taking a guy like Bobby. And I think that's kind of where the Giants are, is that they're being smart, they're being calculated, and they're hoping that what they put together, the collective, the sum is greater than the parts. And I think that's kind of where John Harbaugh is as far as this defensive line goes.
Art Stapleton with us on The Fan. Another veteran they brought in, everybody knows, Odell Beckham Jr. I know, I saw on the internet he ran 20 miles an hour. Great. but what else do you know from that workout with OBJ at the Meadowlands?
I think OBJ believes he still has juice left. I think Harbaugh and Joe Shane both talked about that at the draft when they were asked about him. But this is something that has kind of been gone on over the past couple of years with Odell. He came in, talked to the Giants in 2022. 2023, there was a little flirtation there. I think where Odell is right now and what John Harbaugh said last Saturday, and he's been pretty open about it. He said, look, you know, this isn't vintage OBJ. Like, if he thinks that or we think that, then we're signing on for the wrong reasons. And this is 2.0 Odell. And I think from Odell's perspective, and I've had a chance to kind of exchange some messages with him, I think this is what he desperately wants to close the circle for his career. You know, he's not looking and saying he has 3 years left or 2 years left. He's not putting a limitation on it. But if he could come here and be a part of a team and see how his body holds up, and no expectations, no guarantees. And, you know, look, Odell, you're not guaranteed a roster spot. And come September, he's made it through the summer and you see him as one of your top or top five or six receivers, then he's on the team and he's here and everything's gone great. And well, if he's not, then he's with the Giants and, you know, maybe he decides, you know what? I gave it a good shot. I had a great relationship with Harbaugh from our days in Baltimore. They've held me along. They haven't sold me a bill of goods and I want to retire a Giant and that's it. And Odell's relationship with the franchise is repaired.
Right.
Anybody who's upset with Odell maybe looks at him in a different light and says, you know what? He came here. He gave us everything he had this summer. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, maybe Odell all of a sudden now is, you know, on post-game shows with the Giants and, you know, doing signings somewhere. And he's in New York, but he's back with the Giants. And I think that's ultimately where they hope this whole thing goes, that he's a part of this team. You know, and like Harbaugh said, you know, it's got to be better for us and it's got to be better for him. And I don't think anybody's going in with any delusions here. But stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the Giants look at it and say, you know what? What is the downfall? If you think Odell's going to come here and now all of a sudden be cutting up and, you know, giving you bad headlines or bad back pages, yeah, well, then that's on you. Like, John Harbaugh has now not only met with Odell Beckham Jr. in Arizona at the owners' meetings, where, you know, Odell lived in the area, came into the lobby of the hotel, ended up meeting with Harbaugh a little bit. I mean, they've been talking through this, and I don't know John Harbaugh super well, but what I know of John Harbaugh is that John Harbaugh is not selling Odell a bill of goods. He's not telling him, yeah, you're going to be an all pro, you're going to be this, you're going to be that. He's basically hearing him out and hearing what he says and what he wants to do. So, I know you mentioned, and you and I talked about it before we did this interview, the idea, and, you know, is it nostalgia? Is it just to sell jerseys? Is it just to make people feel good? I'm sure there's part of that, but I think part of it is, would Harbaugh really do this if he didn't think that he can contribute to the team? And sometimes guys contribute to the team in a lot of different ways. You know, you want to talk about Russell Wilson last year. They paid Russell Wilson $10 million. Talk to Jackson Dart about what he learned from Russell Wilson just by watching him, just by having him in the room. Talk to Malik Nabers about what he learned from Russell Wilson by being in the room. Now, I'm not advocating to pay Odell $10 million.
Right.
I think Odell probably comes here with a non-guaranteed contract. But the reality is that some of these guys can kind of teach and learn and follow. And I think if Odell is in that spot, I think that's what appeals to John Harbaugh.
All right, Art. Thanks. That was a lot. Love it. I love having you on. I hope to see you soon. And thanks for carving out some time for us.
Absolutely, Danielle. Thank you very much. Talk to you soon.